You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Nancy Solomon, in for Tanzina Vega. Following last summer's protests against police brutality, calls for civilian oversight of police became widespread in cities across the U.S. Often referred to as civilian oversight or review boards, this type of police reform allows a group of people outside of law enforcement to monitor and review police activity, including instances of misconduct or brutality. Yesterday on the show, we looked at the Civilian Oversight Board in St. Louis, Missouri, and the challenges that board has faced in holding officers accountable. It got us wondering about just how successful or effective these civilian oversight bodies actually are. For that and more, we're joined by Sharon Fairley, professor of the University of Chicago Law School and the former head of Chicago's Civilian Police Oversight Agency. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
What exactly does a civilian oversight body do?
Well, there are lots of different forms of civilian oversight, but when you think about these sort of as a group, you can sort of boil down what they do into four big buckets. So the first is playing a role in the development or evaluation of policing policies and procedures. The second big bucket is involvement in the actual disciplinary process, so the process of investigating complaints of misconduct or investigating critical incidents such as use of force or officer-involved shootings. The third big bucket is helping the department be more transparent, so providing reporting, for example, on use of force incidents. And then the last piece I would call community engagement, being that liaison between the community and the department, being a forum through which community can express their concerns or interests about policing.
And what do we know about how effective these oversight bodies have been? Do they actually work?
Well, what we do know is that cities are increasingly turning to civilian oversight as an important part of police accountability systems and an important element or strategy when it comes to police reform. Now, how effective they are, sort of, you know, there's been a range, right? And even in the, even as well established as civilian oversight is, it still comes under fire time and again because it's a challenging thing to do, and it's certainly not a panacea when it comes to police accountability. It has to be part of a broader system that supports accountability writ large. But in general, you can look to this sort of the key success factors that contribute to making civilian oversight as effective as it can be. And so the first thing is that these entities must have sufficient jurisdictional scope in order to be effective. So say, for example, you have a board and all they can do is look at matters that are referred to them by the chief of police. That's not going to be very robust in terms of their ability to influence and really provide oversight. So jurisdictional scope has to be broad enough that the agency can have an impact. The second thing is resources. When we look back historically, what we see where agencies have failed, it's usually been because they didn't have sufficient resources to fulfill the mission that they've been given. And so resources are really important. And I mean financial, technical, and human, all of those. And then the third big thing is structural independence. The entity has to be able to go about its work in a way that's independent and separate from the police department. They need independent access, for example, to information and materials and reports. They need subpoena power. Transparency has also been an issue. Some of these boards have been limited in the way that they're able to talk publicly about the work that they do. And sometimes that's by choice, sometimes that's by law. You know, for example, a collective bargaining agreement, or there may be a state law in place that prohibits them from going public with details around what they do. So that can often be a challenge. And then the last thing I would say is professionalism. And that's something that I encountered when I was doing the work. It's really important that the people who are involved in this kind of work are trained and really, you know how to do what they're doing. It's very, very difficult work. And so we need people who, you know, are trained and have the skills and experience to actually do it successfully.
You mentioned subpoena power. Yesterday, we learned that in St. Louis, none of the data and materials had been passed on from the police department to the oversight board. So that seems like a particularly critical one. Looking at these boards across the country, can you tell us, like, how many do have subpoena power?
You know, I don't have specific numbers, but what I will say is that it is a source of constant debate when these boards are being formed. There's usually a lot of debate around this. And there's actually even some jurisdictions where it's prohibited by law. For example, in Tennessee, I think in 2019, they passed a state law that actually prohibited these civilian oversight agencies from gaining subpoena power. And this just shows you how, you know, strong the law enforcement lobby is in terms of its political power, because law enforcement is always going to be pushing back against civilian oversight. So that's where that debate comes from. But I'm seeing this, you know, the idea of agencies having subpoena power really, really accelerating just in the last 6 to 9 months in the wake of the summer protests around policing. So I think we're going to see many of these agencies being given subpoena power. For example, the state of Virginia just passed a statute that, you know, created an opportunity for those cities in that state to create civilian oversight with subpoena power.
So much of civilian oversight seems to come from either local or state, at the state level. But is there a role for the federal government in this?
So, you know, the federal government, you know, has the possibility of legislating on a lot of police reform issues. The one big issue that always crops up that would be very appropriate to be addressed at the federal level is the issue of qualified immunity. But because, you know, this kind of oversight is very much about managing local law enforcement activity, it is a local phenomenon. That being said, there is the possibility through state law to help support civilian oversight and create an environment in which civilian oversight can be successful through legislative initiatives like the one I just mentioned from Virginia. Also, California, for example, just recently enacted a statute that enabled the counties of California to create civilian oversight for sheriff's departments, which is an area in which civilian oversight has been slower to gain traction just because sheriffs have their own unique political power, being able to sort of push back against civilian oversight. So state law is also an area where state law can be very helpful in creating an environment in which civilian oversight can flourish.
Sharon Fairley is a professor at the University of Chicago Law School and the former head of Chicago's Civilian Police Oversight Agency. Sharon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.